Military Mondays with David Katz.
I really do feel like I want to march around
really
the studio.
Funny. I'm normally at work this time of the day, so I don't hear the marching bands, the umpapa bands on Chai FM. That's quite something.
I love the tattoos and the things that we have.
Broadcast from Vienna next week.
From Vienna?
Yeah, it sounds very umpapa bands.
But that's a South African military band.
Okay, well, I've learned something. I've also learned that there's a major
South
David
African
Katz.
Military band?
Yeah.
I'm shocked. I thought that was just ad hoc or something. That's great. No, that's got lineage. That's fantastic. Thank you.
It's called authentic.
Oh, no, it's authentic. Sorry. I mean, not lineage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, it has got lineage. It's authentic. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's provenance.
Respect. I didn't know that.
Respect, man.
Respect,
okay,
man.
Let's talk. I mean, since we're talking about gangster, SANDF deployed into Cape Flats.
Well, a knee-jerk reaction. I mean,
what do you mean knee-jerk? It shouldn't have happened long ago.
Well, that's what I'm saying. People look at it as a positive straight away.
Yeah.
And I say we need to be a little bit cautious. Yes, it can be a positive. And
why is
I think,
it negative?
Yeah.
Well, there's for a number of reasons. First of all, the nature of the SANDF has changed from the deployments that it used to do, let's say, between 1994 and 2005 with the demise of the commando units. The commando units were especially trained for rear area defense and working under these conditions and working cooperation with the police. So you've got conventional units now, most probably permanent force units in the main,
yeah,
who are trained to fight conventional battles.
Okay.
Now going into these situations where they don't really have those networks and joint training together with the police. So that's something that needs to be built. That's something the commanders had a lot of, joint training with the police, joint intelligence. All different types of things that they shared with the police. And the SANDF had a role, the commando units had a role, and the police had a role. They had two distinct roles, and they used to work together in order to...
So the commanders were kind of like the... They were more engaged on the public side, but they were military. Is that correct?
The commanders were more, if I could use the word, they were more paramilitary than military.
Define paramilitary.
So okay, so that is the middle road between a police force.
Yes, and the army.
And a conventional army. Like you've got in Italy, you've got the gendarmerie, which is a paramilitary organization. So it's slightly more heavily armed.
And you've got the Swiss Guards in the Vatican and all of that.
Well, Swiss Guards in Vatican.
They'll tell you they're very serious.
No, they are serious, but no, not Swiss Guards in Vatican. Let's keep it to the gendarmerie in Italy.
Okay.
Something that we don't have here. But we approximated that with the commanders. So the commanders were light infantry, lightly armed, trained to work with civilians, trained to use minimum force together with the police. In a conventional army, you use maximum force to get things solved.
I hear you loud and clear, and what you're saying makes sense to me. Do you not just need a presence? Is that not what's called for? You had 13 people shot in Philippi last week.
Yeah,
I mean,
certainly they can make a difference. So my concern is that they can make a difference if it's run properly and conducted properly at the end of the day. That there are proper links built between the police. It's not just a question of employing the SANDF all alone. It's deploying the SANDF together with the police force and working in conjunction with the police force. And the police have roles that the SANDF can't fulfill, and the SANDF have roles that the police can't fulfill.
So what happened to the commanders? Why don't we have them?
No, they were disbanded.
Why?
For political reasons.
Why can't we reestablish them?
Well, one could, but they were disbanded for political reasons. I don't know if the political reasons have disappeared. So,
yeah, but
I mean,
look
that's
at the social
whole,
problems. I mean,
surely, but the forces that are deployed now can be used in the correct role.
Oh.
Just as an instance, the SANDF has no powers of arrest. Absolutely no powers of arrest whatsoever. The police have powers of arrest. So the way we used to operate is that we used to operate in our section, let's say 10 men together with one policeman. And that empowered that section now to go out and do arrests. Because we never wanted to arrest anybody, because otherwise you've got to appear in court.
I as an individual can arrest somebody.
Absolutely, but you've got to appear in court. You've got to appear in court. So once you've arrested somebody, you're a witness. You're a material witness, and you now need to go and appear in court, which you don't want to do. Otherwise, your army's going to be sitting in court the whole time. So you need that policeman. But that takes training. That takes a link between the police and the soldiers. And that takes a bit of time to establish. So there are problems that need to be overcome. And what on the strategic level, one of the major, major problems that I have a problem with, that I think we need to be cautious about, is what happens if this doesn't work? This is something, it's a last resort measure to send the army in. Now, what happens if it doesn't work? What do we do then?
Well, 2015, they sent the army in to Mannenberg.
Yes.
And then.
With good results.
Well, they withdrew. They were in there for 3 months.
Yes, yes.
And then they
yes.
withdrew and that
but
was that.
This is a very serious situation. This is a very, very serious situation. You've got a lot of gangs running around. And I'm saying to you that the reason why the army was not deployed quickly into these situations in the past is that the government was worried that this is a situation of last resort. If this doesn't work, where to from there? So
you
that's
don't
a problem.
It
it's
might
got
have been
to work.
Like part of corruption, also, David.
Where that the soldiers are susceptible
that
to corruption, certainly.
That yeah. they weren't. No. That they weren't deployed because somewhere along the line, crime pays.
No, I don't think so. I think they weren't deployed for the reasons that I'm speaking
about.
Sorry,
I'm a little jaded when it comes
to
politics.
No, I understand that people
government.
Are jaded. I understand that. But I think there were very better reasons why they weren't deployed. First of all, the army's not, first of all, the government is reluctant to send soldiers into a civilian situation. I mean, we all understand that. Once that happens, it sets a certain perception about the country that we live in. So you use soldiers very sparingly. And you don't always use them against your own population
okay.
and sending them in. So that's the first concern. The second concern we've touched on is that it's a situation of last resort. You don't want to send in the army unless you're going to solve the situation or at least alleviate the situation
sure.
properly. Because if this doesn't work, it's going to be a lot of mud on a lot of people's faces. And then also the conventional forces that have been sent in are not as well trained as the old commando units used to be to handle this type of situation. So there was a certain reluctance to do that because you're sending in conventional forces in a civilian situation. So those are most probably the reasons why there was a reluctance. I think corruption is right at the bottom of the line. I mean, corruption is rife everywhere and we understand that and there's measures being taken for that. But that's not the main reason why these guys have been sent in. So I would be very hesitant to greet this ecstatically and say this is going to be the magic bullet and solve the situation. This needs to be very carefully handled. I think it's a good move. I think it had to be done. We couldn't leave the situation.
Sure.
But I think now, that the army has got its work cut out for it.
The army
building
and the
a relationship with the police.
Together, yeah.
Yeah, they need to build a relationship with the police. And
I can only imagine the relief, and I've seen videos
yes.
of the residents just saying, "Thank God,
absolutely.
Now our children can go to school. We can go to work."
Yes, yes, yes.
You know,
absolutely.
Can you imagine living in the fear of constant drive-bys, gang shootings, gang murders? Why can't we get on top of this gang story?
Is this an absolute, utter failing of policing? Is that what is actually going on here? Is that what collapsed?
Well, they've been overwhelmed. I mean, the police services have been overwhelmed, and there's obviously a case of corruption, and obviously the police, a lot of the police live in the area, they're intimidated, so it's intimidation, corruption, lack of training, lack of discipline. There's a whole lot of problems, and also the socio-economic situation. You
sure.
can't ever get away from that in South Africa. There's a deep, deep underlying socio-economic situation. So the army and the police are never going to be able to solve the situation of crime in this country until there's inroads made on the socio-economic
sure.
front. So there's that issue
kids
also.
Kids are being recruited to gangs so early.
Yes. Yeah.
So early.
That's their family.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole, I mean, I don't know much about it, but there's a whole thing about joining gangs and that becomes
and
your
you
family.
Have to kill,
and that type
yeah,
of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
And it's a vicious cycle that needs to be broken.
How
yeah.
big is a battalion? How many people in a battalion?
Battalion is 1,000 people.
Okay, so that's how many military personnel they've deployed one battalion.
One battalion is three yeah, yeah. One battalion is three companies, yeah. So it's a big force. It's a big force.
Do you know any examples anywhere in the world for that matter where this problem has actually been dealt with satisfactorily?
Well, you can take a look at the situation in Colombia, where this has been an ongoing situation, where the armies be deployed all over the place, and eventually the police services in Colombia formed their own. I think it was called Los Pepes. I mean, this is just coming to my
okay,
head
yeah.
from watching Discovery Channel, but the police formed a vigilante group and started to take out the gang leaders and that type of thing. So it spiraled out of control there. So we've got to be very careful here that you know these things are kept under wraps. Properly conducted and it doesn't spiral out of control. because it just becomes another turf war at the end of the day. So yeah, this is it opens up a Pandora's box here. This deployment. So we just have to watch it very, very carefully.
Just explain to me one thing. The police, is that a national responsibility as opposed to a provincial? And where I'm going with this question is I'm thinking back to the water issues where the Cape DA was in massive disagreement with the ANC over who was supplying. And I'm wondering if the same dynamic is in any way at play here.
So in terms of provincial police versus...
Exactly.
I think the Minister of Police is fully involved. Yeah, he's at the national level.
And
one of the solutions, I bet you they sit around the table and they say, okay, we can't deploy people from the Cape Flats, police from the Cape Flats into the Cape Flats, guaranteed. So let's get some people from other provinces to come in here and do the job, because you obviously want to protect the families of the police. So obviously it's conducted at a national level. It must be. I mean, my logic would be is that you use police from other provinces that don't have family links into the Cape Flats from the intimidation point of view.
That makes perfect sense. That's how bad of it.
Yeah.
Just thinking it's all complicated by this tick story that the drug use is just so omnipresent in the Cape Flats.
This all goes to people's minds. Gangs, drugs, vice, this all goes together. That's part of the whole.
So interesting is, you know, we talk about tick and how that is a symptom of socioeconomics, but United States, they have got a massive, massive, massive epidemic of methamphetamine.
Yes, yeah.
Have you seen?
I've been reading about that, and in the wealthier parts of the country, not in the necessarily...
And it's people our age
that are getting
hooked on drugs.
Yeah.
They're becoming drug addicts, and it's absolutely insane when you hear.
Well, I mean, I won't go much into my recent trip to Ibiza. And, I mean, the youngsters, did you go to Ibiza? And, I mean, I'm sure the youngsters partake over there, but I mean, there were a couple of guys my age that also, got involved there. It's unbelievable to think that somebody, you know, of our age can sit and play around with drugs and everything like that. But that's a sign of our times. You know, the richer you are, the more designer your drugs are. So,
wow.
That's the times we live in.
Crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Right. Zanati is telling us that we need to go to her for some headlines. Okay, what can we expect in your next news bulletin, Zanati?
All right, in your headlines, 65 people killed in Nepal, India and Bangladesh floods. 30 people are reported missing and 38 have been injured. DRC confirms a first case of Ebola in the city of Goma. More than 1,600 people have died since the outbreak began in eastern DRC. Jacob Zuma to appear at state capture inquiry today. This is over allegations that he oversaw systematic looting of state funds and shop donates bicycle to man in need. His bicycle that he uses every day to get around was stolen in a robbery. Catch the full bulletin at 9.
Thank you so much. All right, Unsigned coming in and says the government are reluctant to use the commandos because the old government used the army on the streets. So it's the association. Could be. Can't we reform it based on the same principles where you've got something that resembles a commando and it serves community?
Look, I don't want to second guess why the commandos were disbanded, but a large part of the problem was that the government of the day in those days were worried that there were certain right-wing groups that had access to the commandos and posed a threat. And I think they were entitled in those days to be worried that there was a threat posed by some of the rural commando units. Unfortunately, they didn't close certain commando units. They closed a whole lot together with the urban commandos. I was part of an urban commando, and we did great work here in the Sandton area, Johannesburg City, that type of thing. And we certainly weren't right-wing, and we certainly posed no threat to the government. And there were other commando units in the same boat that we were. But there were rural commandos where it was a problem. So they felt that this was a threat to the government. I don't want to second guess, but that was one of the reasons why it was closed down.
Just want to weigh in. Mark Lubo sent us a communication here, and he writes the following. He says, unless you can arrest, charge, and remove from society the leaders, the drug and human traffickers, you cannot win. Then goes on to say shoot to kill, which is maybe pushing it a bit far, but, I mean, that's pretty much a sentiment that you were expressing earlier.
Look, there's no doubt about it. You need powers of arrest to do this, but also to have powers of arrest, you need a good intelligence system. You need a fantastic intelligence system, and you need a joint intelligence system together with the SANDF.
Yeah, but right now the intelligence system is it's all governed by the gangs. How do you even get intelligence from that?
I'm sure the police have done a lot of work there, and they know who the ringleaders are, and they've got a foothold there on the intelligence side, and that's how you solve the problem. That's how we solve the problem, working together with the police. Can I give you one example? A very, very good example.
Yeah, sure.
There was a funeral for one of the hijackers.
Mm-hmm.
So the police went to that funeral and photographed and videoed every single person at that funeral. They came back, they did their homework, and they identified 10 or 15 people that were part of that gang, of the gang member that was shot. We then went out together with the police and arrested 6 or 7 of those members that we could find. And we served as support because it's a pretty dangerous type of thing. So we supported the police, and the police went in and arrested these guys. Once we had arrested these guys, then we used them as intelligence to find out who else was in the network. This is the type of work that we were doing at the end of the day, and it was very, very effective. And that's what I'm talking about, intelligence. So it's not a question of just arresting people. It's a question of arresting people, getting as much information out of them, as much intelligence out of them to arrest more people. So it's a long-term game.
You know, long-term, we have to fix people's lives.
Yes.
You know, yeah. I mean, it was last week.
Yes.
One of the Jewish organizations was handing out blankets and soup in El Dorado Park.
Yeah.
El Dorado Park has an 85% unemployment rate.
Right, right. We used to operate a lot in El Dorado Park, a big crime area also, big drug area, crime area.
Until you fix those core issues.
Those socioeconomic issues, yeah. Absolutely.
And I've got to tell you, I mean, I've been to those areas. I've been to the Manenbergs and the Philippines in my Cape Town days. It's bad. It's really, really bad. It cannot but produce this. It just can't. There's nowhere else to go. There's nothing to aspire to. There's nothing to be. It's as bad as it can get, really.
Absolutely. Look, we can't wait for socioeconomic measures to take place before we do something about it. But at the strategic level, something needs to be done.
Sure.
At that level.
Yeah. Mervyn's weighing in on Nugget Street. Apparently, this is more important than Cape Flat.
Could be. Yeah.
And
if this is to do with Pitsar, I agree with him 100%.
Okay, yeah. So Pitsar.
He's going to mention the Winton Joy, I bet you.
So Pitsar is made also from gelatine, from calf's hooves.
There we go.
Blah.
See, it's the real deal. It's not just...
My first car was a 1965 Mini. It refused to go up Nugget Hill.
There we go.
It managed halfway. That's it. No more. Not even first gear.
No.
So did cars only come down a Nugget Hill?
No. It was they changed. I think it was down and up, and then they changed it. I was only around when it was up. I won't even tell you the year because it'll give away quite a lot. But I must say, we used to sit on the balcony of the Winton Joy at my Bobba's flat and take bets on which car was going to make it up the hill and which didn't. And one out of five cars didn't make it up Nugget Hill.
You see, when we didn't have televisions, we could do so much more, David.
But it also had a lot more fun. That was reality TV at its best.
Yeah.
So if I don't know where Nugget Hill is, then other people don't know where. What is this place?
It's because you're Capetonian.
Exactly. So there are plenty of people streaming.
Nugget Hill.
Is this near, like, Ponte or one of those?
It's a few blocks away from Ponte. It's near that very famous, the Casablanca Roadhouse. You're going to tell me you don't know about the Casablanca Roadhouse. Casablanca Roadhouse was the roadhouse in Johannesburg.
Okay, I mean, there's something called Google Maps.
Yeah.
Google Maps.
I'm looking at the two of you and the nostalgia is near Ponte, pouring over you.
It's a very,
both.
Very...
You're 100, and
roadhouses.
No, he's 100% right. It's near Ponte. There's Ponte, then the park. There's Ponte, then a park, and after the park is Nugget Hill. 100%.
There's a memory.
You've got the right place.
There's a memory there.
Rodney, nice to hear from you, Rod. Good morning. Just a snippet with regards to dogs. I asked one of the foremost rabbis in the world that exact question, and his reply was that the dogs didn't bark when we left Egypt, so we should treat them kindly. You know what? We should treat everything kindly. But, I'll stand by that. Do you know what this is in relation to?
I don't even want to comment on it. I mean, it's
ridiculous. So do you know what it's in relation to?
It's these in relation rabbis, to the rabbi saying that dogs are unclean.
You're accursed if you have what?
Well, you know what? I'll live accursed. How's that?
I'm saying that it's wrong. Okay, but I don't know what
I'll
they
take
said.
My chances.
I can tell you what a journalist from...
I mean, I know what you feel about your dogs. I know absolutely what you feel about it. What, are you going to turf your dogs now?
No, what I'm doing is I'm challenging the story.
Yeah.
I'm challenging the story, and I'm saying let's speak to the journalists, let's speak to the rabbis, because it doesn't make sense.
It's beneath challenging.
It doesn't make sense that rabbis can say that.
Can I be right-wing about this? It's beneath challenging.
You're right-wing.
It's beneath challenging. I wouldn't even challenge it. It's ridiculous.
You have to challenge.
No, it's ridiculous.
You have to challenge, because otherwise it goes out there as the truth. And they could have been completely misrepresented.
What happens?
And by a journalist from Haaretz, I wouldn't doubt it for 5 seconds.
Oh, so you're saying there's a misrepresentation. That's something different.
That's what I'm challenging.
Okay, but if
they actually didn't say this.
Well, you're hoping that he didn't say that.
Kathy.
14 of them.
Kathy, it was said. 14, yeah. It was said. Never mind. Don't shoot the messenger.
No,
don't shoot the messenger.
No, you want to believe it, son.
Kathleen's rate weighs... Well, let me say that again. Ridiculous. Has weighed in, and it's interesting because she takes a different approach somewhat. And she says, regarding the comment on dogs, the problem with these rabbis saying this gives the fanatics and the uneducated an excuse to hurt dogs. I think that's interesting because it's coming from a different angle there. Mm. Makes me very, very angry. Also, let's remember that when dogs were praised because they didn't bark when Jews left Egypt. Clearly that's something that's resonating with a lot of people out there. But interesting approach. You know, what is the effect of this decision on the current dogs?
But there may not even be a decision, Simon. That's what I'm saying. I don't believe that these rabbis actually said this. I think that they've been misrepresented.
Good to know, Shoma, you've got.
Did you watch Tishel? You didn't watch Tishel. Exactly. I've asked you to watch Tishel, and there's a situation
where he points the dog out. He doesn't want the dog.
But he felt something, and he felt there was a problem.
But you could see the struggle. This wasn't just easy.
Struggle. Yeah, wasn't
this
easy.
Was, oh my goodness, I don't want you, but he's so cute,
no,
how can I help it?
Throw the dog out. The dog disappeared.
Tishel's not life. It's not real love.
It was a TV thing.
No, we're going on to postmodernism now, whether it represents real life or not. Eh? So in other words, does fiction represent nonfiction?
It's Haaretz. It's a conspiracy. It's a left-wing conspiracy. Yeah, you see, sometimes.
There was dead air there.
I actually stun her into silence.
There was dead air there for 14
seconds. And I get the most amazing sense of accomplishment when that happens, because it means I've pushed the right button.